Hello, this is Catherine May, and I'm here in the British Library with Sonia Bouet, and we're here to talk about the Nuno project, and also to kind of think about the ways that the project has developed and the way that your thinking's developed, because we've had loads and loads of conversations about this as time's gone on, and I'm really, really interested in how doing this has changed the way you think about it. So, hello.
Hello.
So, first of all, let's talk about how Nuno came about. Nuno means neither use nor ornament.
That's correct.
But that title came a little way along the project, actually, didn't it?
Well, it did. It actually came after we got our Arts Council funding. So, my bit to the Arts Council was to bring two networks together, two very different networks, which I had come to know through over a period of time through two very different parts of my life, which had somehow come together. So basically what happened was the first network, who are museum project research artists, I got to know online through a blog that I created before my autism diagnosis. They've kind of stayed with me along the line as I've sort of discovered this thing about myself, which is that I'm autistic. And that's been a very rewarding relationship with this group of artists. So my initial, the project initially began with that group. And then as I discovered my autism, I developed another network of creatives who were discovering that they were autistic and who felt like they wanted a peer network, and who, some of whom felt very sort of held back in their careers and really wanted opportunities and lacked opportunities.
Because so much about the arts world is about networking.
Absolutely. So I kind of got really fascinated by this idea of creating an alternative network and then also bringing two networks together with the idea that they could facilitate each other. And my core concept really was not just that the non-autistic network could enable the autistic network, but vice versa, that the autistic network also would have something of value to bring to the non-autistic network, and that we could try and see if there could be this phrase that I keep talking about, which is a cross-pollination of ideas and influences, which I really love. So as I went along in my development as an artist, as a project manager, as somebody who could approach the Arts Council for credible project B. I decided that my next step was to try and bring these two networks together, but I didn't have the whole concept.
Right.
And that's where the use nor ornament came in later. So my first concept was that we would all somehow show together at the same time, but maybe the two networks would do something different, so that the museum project research artists who had already developed their proposals for the project would have an exhibition, and that maybe the autistic artists, neurodivergent artists who had formed a group which we were now calling WebWorks, would have an exhibition program which would run alongside it.
So more performative, you were thinking more
performative,
fluid.
Maybe taking place in different venues.
Yeah, less fixed.
Less fixed, and maybe over the period of time, so the exhibition was going to run for a month, so I thought, wouldn't it be great if we had different events running throughout that month? And it might be that some of them would be online, it might be that some of them would be in different places, not Oxford necessarily, because the project is based in Oxford, but the artists are all over the country.
Scattered to the wind, yeah.
So it was kind of, I mean, it wasn't that my idea was half-baked, I'm not going to say that. It was just that it hadn't quite fully developed in the sense of how am I going to get this across to audiences?
Yeah.
How am I going to get people to understand that, you know, this is about two groups coming together, that they're actually part of the same project, when we didn't even have the same name for ourselves. Where, because this had grown so organically, the website was potentially very confusing because we had this museum project research website, which we created during
different
our research and development phase. Then we had this group called WebWorks, but we all had to sort of somehow come together under one concept. And I can remember worrying away, teasing away at this problem of how to help audiences understand.
But I always think that that's I mean, I've been involved in lots of funded projects over the years. And actually, the Arts Council, I think, are very good at acknowledging that project developers are on. It's one of the great beauties of working with them. They are much less fit and they expect things to be much less pinned down than other funders. But I always think that that's the gold standard of a good project. If you know exactly what's going to happen in it, as you're writing the funding application, there's no point in even doing it. There's no exploration.
I just so agree. I mean, I really felt that. And the more I sort of pushed against that mould of what we'd sort of written in the funding bit, I knew that we would stay within the framework. I knew that we would deliver what we'd said we were going to deliver, but I realised that I still had some work to do in teasing out the detail. And you're right, and I kept thinking, you know, this is a living, breathing thing. It's not a static cookie cutter. It's a process. It's not a cookie cutter project. It's a process. And one of the most important things, actually, that happened very early on in the project, which informed aspects of the decision to go with neither use nor ornament, and also fundamentally change how we presented ourselves as we went along, were the sensitivities of the autistic artists involved in the project. That happened very early on. And this whole sort of issue that we have as autistic professionals about coming out and then dealing with the consequences of being out in what, you know, sort of in unexpected ways. So you can be out and feel comfortable in some environment and then suddenly find yourself in another environment where it just doesn't feel okay at all.
And it's, so it's not a sorry, I interrupted.
I
just wanted to pick up on that, really, because I think having been part of the process a little bit, you're at the centre of this kind of whirlwind, as I perceive it from the outside, and it looks like very, very hard work, actually. But I think one of the things that has been really clear is not just, you know, different sensitivities to talking about yourself as autistic in the different artists, but also, that the fact that the more that we go out and talk about ourselves as autistic professionals, the more we become aware of very, very different responses from different people. And that constant sense that you're having to mediate people's basic understanding of what autism is, so that when you say you're autistic, you could get a range of different responses, ranging from doubt and disbelief and extreme rudeness, condescension, over-interest.
I'm nodding vigorously.
It's a complicated place to be, and it feels deeply uncomfortable sometimes.
I would completely agree with you, and I think it's the complexity of this endeavour. So what we set out to do is really, really complicated, and you have to be very nuanced about it. And so what was wonderful about Neither Use Nor Ornament as a concept was that it kind of encompassed the fact that, you know, the artistic side of the project really is about working with objects. So it was perfect from that point of view, and the transformation of objects through the art, you know, through the art process, the art making process. So that covered that beautifully. And then the Neither Use Nor Ornament, in terms of a kind of disparaging comment, a term that's used to mean that, you know, something is pretty useless and it's a bit ugly too, sort of took on a bit of a meaning for the neurodivergent and autistic side of the project. And I began thinking of that as a potential provocation to audiences, because we said to the Arts Council, we want to challenge perception. And I think this feeds back into what you've just been saying, Catherine, because in order to challenge perceptions, we have to be out. But in being out, we also have to take on board a whole cultural baggage, unhelpful,
everybody else's baggage,
painful sometimes, cultural baggage, which means that we can't do our jobs because we're kind of, you know, sidetracked. Or, I mean, a very good example of this is me being completely railroaded for a couple of days by a very unfortunate play which is on at the moment, which shall be remain nameless, but has a horrible ableist trope at its core. And you know, you can find yourself being a cultural commentator,
and
you can find yourself
loaded word, activist.
Yes, activist. Yeah. And you can find yourself suddenly being railroaded from the creative side of what is a very important, you know, very, very heartfelt and important project. You've become a spokesperson. And in some ways, I don't mind if that is, because one of the other things that we do is we do advocate and we do consult for arts organisations. We're very keen, actually, to get some of our messages across in a wider sense. But it's this kind of whole cultural maelstrom
it's that sense of responsibility coupled with a sense that you have to protect yourself from the harm that getting involved in that can do.
Yeah.
And
Because it's so personal as well.
Because it's so personal.
Yeah.
Because it really does hit on, you know, a lot of problems that we might have all had individually about the way that we're perceived, and for loads of us about the way our children are perceived as well. You know, that loads and loads of people who are advocating for themselves as autistics have also got family members that they've also got at the back of their mind when they're thinking.
Yeah.
And I also, for me, what becomes increasingly frustrating is that actually I'm kind of stuck in a double bind, that on one hand, yes, I feel this absolute responsibility to speak up as part of my community, and I'm, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, you're privileged because you can communicate. Yeah, exactly. I feel that responsibility really heavily, that because I'm a communicator, because I'm really verbal, over-verbal if anything, because I write and that's what I'm good at, I feel this responsibility to chime in, sometimes when I don't even feel like doing it, actually, emotionally.
Yeah.
But then you become perceived as somebody who is obsessed with autism and obsessed with themselves and their own autism, and who can only speak to that.
Yeah.
And there's a real double bind going on.
There is a double bind, and I think, you know, it's really fascinating. As you were talking, I was just sort of reminded of how I got into this, and the genesis of the project really is in my own journey of understanding how to break through some of the barriers as a neurodivergent / autistic person in the arts, because I didn't understand some of the very, very basic social code and professional codes that are embedded in opportunity.
Mm.
And that's not only to do with networking, that's to do with language, conceptually.
Yeah.
I mean, before seeking sort of help from mentors who now work with me, I did not know what professional development meant. I had no clue.
Yeah.
And so what happened to me was that I went on this journey of learning, realised that actually for some of us the solution to this is quite simple. It's a case of people giving you knowledge that you can then unlock opportunity with.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do that for other people. I felt a responsibility to the other artists who I was getting to know online, and I just thought, I can't leave them behind. I want to take them with me on this journey.
Yeah, and that means, on one hand, that's brilliant because we need leadership, and we need wisdom actually. We're kind of a community that's almost lacking elders,
I think,
in a sense of people having progressed through. On the other hand, that's very personally exposing, and I know that you got to the point where you felt like, I don't really want to talk about autism in this at all anymore.
I feel like that quite often. I think it's another part of the journey, really. I mean, I want at some point to mention the mentoring side of this project, which is really, really key, but I think that really all we want is to be allowed to be professionals. I hear that from my mentees too. We don't talk a lot about autism amongst ourselves. Maybe initially when we first began working together. I mean, some of the people on this project have been working with for over a year now. And I think that what happens to you, I'm now 3 years into my diagnosis, I think what happens to you is when you first get diagnosed, it's the big thing in your life, of course, because it's massive. It's a non-trivial event. It's at the forefront of your mind. And as you kind of digest the process of understanding what autism is and what it means to you individually, I think it can then start to sort of become more comfortable. And for some of us who are lucky and privileged, we can get on with our lives and actually go from strength to strength in many ways.
Yeah.
And then autism isn't really at the forefront of my mind. I don't wake up thinking, pinching myself anymore and thinking, oh my God, I'm autistic, as I did when I was first diagnosed.
Or indeed having that doubt all the time. Am I? I have to kind of account for this today. I become aware of it at certain moments.
Yeah.
And at other moments, I'm not aware of it at all, actually.
And most of my time now, I'm sort of realising actually what it is to be a busy, productive, functional person. This is what other people have been experiencing all their lives. I now am experiencing that, so I understand how fortunate that feels, how exciting it feels to have lots of projects on, to have colleagues, to have people you can bounce ideas from. Something very wonderful that's happened on this project is the sense that I have a group of people who I can call on. This has been a very demanding project, project managing a complex project as
very
an autistic person who actually struggles with what we call executive functioning, which is organising. So I put my hand up and said, I'm going to do this massive organising job, even though I'm severely compromised in some areas of organisation. And what's happened is it's been lovely because I've been able to reach out to my network, my professional network, WebWorks, and say, help me please. And you've all got such an amazing range of skills and goodwill towards the project that, you know, as a group, you've come forward and really enabled me to do this. And I don't really think it's about one person leading. I think it's about modelling something.
Yeah. And setting up the environment in which to...
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are challenges to that, aren't there? I mean, I always find... It's really difficult, isn't it, to talk about autism without making it sound negative. I always try and accentuate the positives as well, because actually I do... Honestly, like, if I'm going to be completely frank, I look around at loads of neurotypical lives and think, I wouldn't want what you've got. My stuff is better, but that's by the by. So I kind of always feel this responsibility to talk about the positive stuff. But also, I don't ever want to talk down my own community, because we talk down so much. However, I think, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but organising a project like this is about helping a lot of different people with different needs and different ways of working to come together.
Yeah.
And that's challenging.
That is challenging. That is really challenging. But what I will say is that there have been huge challenges for people across the two networks.
Yes. Yes.
And what I have found is that, you know, there have been people on both sides, and I hate to say both sides, because I no longer, I mean, that's been one of the wonderful things, is that I no longer think about this as two different networks.
Mm, you've merged them.
They've come together and they've started talking to each other, which is really nice. That's happened through the art, which is brilliant, because everybody started looking at each other's projects and seeing connections and being inspired, and that's wonderful. But also, you know, need is human.
Yeah.
And there are needs across the project, and what I've also discovered is it's been really, really beneficial for artists across the networks to be working with somebody who is so conscious of the need to adapt and who is able to be flexible and say, okay, well, we have this problem, which means that you might not be able to deliver the work in this form. Let's think about it in another way. And that's my first... The minute anybody says to me they have a problem, that's my first response. Well, how can we make this work?
Yeah.
How can we do this so that you can take part?
But isn't that interesting? Because actually one of the things that comes up over and over in autistic diagnosis or the criteria is inflexibility.
And couldn't be more wrong.
Do you know what? I mean, having worked with a few autistic people now, I actually find them often more flexible, but maybe in different ways.
In different ways.
I mean, I personally feel very inflexible about certain things.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, flexibility is a kind of professional coat that I can wear when I know I'm going to be required to be flexible.
Yeah.
And therefore, in the workplace, I think I can be more flexible than other people because I'm using it as a conscious skill. I'm thinking
okay, this moment requires my flexibility.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I think one of my thoughts actually travelling here today was thinking about how much I personally have sort of developed in terms of project management and leadership skills. I've sort of grown into it as the project's gone on. And one of the things I'm very conscious of, say, sort of in contrast to a previous Arts Council funded project of mine, which was much smaller and which involved a very tight concept. And I can remember at times being very thrown by requests to change things. And, you know, it was very difficult for me. So I think it is like a professional journey as well. And I think that's right. You can take on the mantle of being
the flexible one in the room.
And I think also because we're constantly having to, on this project, having to think about other people's needs. That's kind of the first thing on the agenda. I've made that decision at certain points in the project where some of the pressures were building up on a couple of people working on the project. I realised that I needed to think about design. And put need right at the top. And if I hadn't covered need, then I hadn't got the design right. And we did actually tweak some of the project design as regards roles and, you know, timings and all kinds of things as we went along.
Interesting. I mean, I'm conscious, actually, it's probably time to bring this conversation to a close. But I know, we could talk for ages. And the piece that I've made for you, I'm in the middle of making for you, is about conversation, but it started off more broadly about conversation, but actually I've narrowed down into it being a conversation about us, because when did we first start talking? A couple of years ago?
I think we bonded online, because I remember you were having great problems with diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I sort of chipped in and said, I'm really, really sorry about that. That's awful. And I sort of made a few suggestions about where you might be able to get a diagnosis, which would be a positive experience. And I think we bonded over that.
And then we had a very long email conversation.
Yes. And then we met.
Yeah.
Because you were thinking of writing a book at that point.
I was. A different book. I think I was in the middle of writing Electricity. I'd already written it. My memory is awful. I'm really bad at taking myself in time. But I know that we both recognise so much of each other.
And so it was mind blowing meeting you. It really was.
We always say we're a very similar flavour, you and I. But it's been really interesting I've picked out three conversations that we've had, and actually we do talk about autism a lot, and we do talk about our experience of it, but also we talk a lot about being creative and our experience of being creative. And I think that's what I wanted to zone in on in my piece. It's been really interesting making it and using found material to kind of track a relationship in a strange kind of way. And so this is lovely to kind of culminate it with this conversation.
Well, I just want to say I'm really excited to read your piece or hear your piece.
There'll
or
be
both.
A bit of each.
And I have wanted to say to you, and I didn't have space to write it in my piece for the booklet. School children, a crocodile is swarming in front of my eyes, but I'll carry on.
This is kind of representing the experience here, isn't it? That all of these different sounds keep intruding and drawing our thoughts away. And at the moment there are about 30 children biling
past. Oh my goodness, this could take some time.
I feel like this is a deeply symbolic moment.
I'm trying to tell you about our conversation and I can't.
It's like I always think the Wichita Lineman is a great metaphor for my life, that inability to communicate and that meaning to get a message through and not be able to. Here is the Wichita Lineman walking past. I think they've gone. Please do
come. What I wanted to say in my booklet piece, and I didn't quite manage to fit it in because we had space restrictions, was that my piece for Nuno is called Conversation.
Oh.
It started out with the title Portrait. And it was my contact with you and the little piece of recording that I made for you, which made me decide that I had to use the type of conversation. So that's really fascinating. And I think that whenever we meet, even though it's generally because we're doing something that's about autism,
yeah,
we usually at some point spark each other off with some sort of creative idea.
Yeah.
That's just lovely.
So that's, I think, this whole trope of us not being able to communicate and those difficulties and barriers, I rarely have a problem communicating with you or certainly with other autistic women and men that I know. I find that my communication gets more difficult with people who don't think in the way that I do.
Is that
natural free flowing conversation happening very easily?
Yeah, and I also think there's something very liberating, and I remember us talking about this, it might come out in your piece, I don't know, talking about not having to mask.
Yeah.
And how relaxing that is. And actually,
remember when we got together in Canterbury and I dropped a bottle 5 times? You were like, oh yeah, there you go again.
I know, it's like it's a level of kind of acceptance and forgiveness of foibles is really high between us, and there's kind of a respect that grows.
Empathy.
And you empathy, and I think also the more contact I have with autistic people who I'm in contact with quite regularly, it's like you kind of tune into each other.
Yeah.
And I've come to realise also there are some quite annoying things that I do that I shouldn't do. You know, and I can sort of crowd people out because I'm very verbal.
Right.
And I'm
quite
quick.
Yeah.
In
thought
sometimes. And for some autistic people that can be really awful. So I sort of, some of my friends find that really difficult. So I kind of also, it's about learning to navigate each other and moderate. But it's not the same as masking.
No.
That I feel I have to sometimes do for neurotypical people.
That will to adjust and to moderate is there. And that
it's massive and it's mutual. It comes from the other side
absolutely.
As well.
And to make those reasonable adjustments that in institutions can seem so unreasonable, but actually on a human level they're just literally about tuning in and thinking about what the other person might be wanting from you and doing your best to control it. And then that mutual respect bouncing back at you that actually I will do my best to communicate with you in a way that it's not rocket science, is it? Anyway, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.